Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine Food Friday, January 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's Food Friday once again. Now we're hitting the strong strides of winter when the fields of green are covered with white, with local veggies and fruits out of season. Some may feel the need to brighten up their plates. Good old Chef Rick Orlando is here of New World Bistro in Albany and New World Catering in Saugerties. He has some solutions for you. And the studio, Studio A, already smells great. Tune your ears. Wet your appetites. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. And he just showed me how to crack a coconut, which is amazing. He used our producer's head. We'll explain that in a moment. It's Vox Pop. It begins after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. With the arrival of winter comes a stretch of time when a good portion of the region's fruits and vegetables are out of season. So how can you brighten up your plates during the dark days of winter? Chef Rick Orlando is in the studio on this Food Friday to help us solve that question. Rick is the chef owner of New World Home Cooking Company in Saugerties, New York, and chef manager of New World Bistro Bar in Albany. Along with eating at his restaurants, you may have also seen him taste victory on the Food Network's Chopped program, his PBS program, Rick Orlando's TV Kitchen, or maybe you've read his book, We Want Clean Food. Rick Orlando, welcome back to Food Friday.
How's it going, Ray?
Happy New Year, my friend.
Yes, indeed.
Our number to call here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. 2551. You can also email the program voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. When our producer Jim Lavulis pitched the show to me, he said it's July and January on the program today, and you have some colorful stuff here.
Yeah, well, you know, let me tell you something. When we first opened the original New World Home Cooking on Zena Road in Woodstock in 1993, we opened in May. We cranked through summer. I had all local farms bringing me great berries and tomatoes. And then we went through fall and great local stuff. And then it started snowing. And by mid-January, we hadn't seen turf in a month.
Yeah.
And the local stuff had pretty much, you know, condensed down to apples, kale, potatoes.
Right. Stuff that'll keep.
And I just got, I was getting very, like, you know, just kind of, I guess you would call it chef's cabin fever.
Yeah.
So I went down to the Bronx and I loaded up the back of my Volvo with all the tropical stuff I can find. And we did a weekend called July and January. We did all Caribbean and tropical food. And some of those dishes have obviously stayed on my menu because they're so popular. But it was really popular. People loved the fact, you know, listen, I just heard on the weather report today that these next few days are going to be the darkest nights of the year.
Ah.
So why not bring some mango, green banana, plantain, cherimoya, good spices into your life. It's a good way to balance out the winter and keep your soul warm.
You know, and you brought a coconut.
And
I've never
seen
a coconut open before. I thought you used a hammer.
Back of a knife works well. You just kind of toss it and whack it in the middle with the back of a knife a few times, and it goes right down the center.
So
it spills coconut water all over the console.
Well, that was an impressive spill. You know, and you're not the only person in this neighborhood to bring a knife, but you brought a nice knife with you.
Well.
And you used the back of the knife.
The back of the knife, yeah. You don't want to use the blade. You'll ruin it.
So that's nice. So we have coconut here, and then the chamoy, did you say?
Oh, cherimoya. I've got green papaya, yellow papaya, green plantain. I've got these beautiful... these are
Tangelo,
California tangelos, which are beautiful, some red bananas. And I made some stuff for you to taste.
Okay, so I see, well, I had the
jerk chicken wings.
Chicken wings, which it's one of the greatest things ever made.
And one of our best sellers in the restaurant.
Oh, is it popular?
Oh, yeah. And then we brought the Cuban pot roast. Just because it's Cuban, you can make that year-round. That's some grass-fed chuck, but it's a Cuban dish. It's got sofrito and it's warm. And those two recipes are on rickorlando.com. But I brought some other fun stuff for you. I brought our signature kale salad because kale is still around and beautiful, but I add a tropical flair to it to make it summery. We do a local apple chutney, some curried cashews, a little curry vinaigrette.
You almost sounded apologetic about bringing kale before the show started.
Oh, I was
why does it get
you.
A bad rap?
Kale doesn't get a bad rap. Well, kale's a fabulous vegetable, but it is, you know, when something gets that popular, it becomes kind of like the Backstreet Boys of food, so you have to kind of
never heard that one before.
You
got
to kind of figure out a way to make it hip.
Yeah.
But it's delicious. I've been cooking kale since I started. This here is a little twist on how to bring a little summer into winter. This is a play on a caprese salad.
Okay.
But instead of using horrible out-of-season tomatoes, we're using fresh mango.
Oh, fantastic.
And it's a beautiful combination. The mangoes almost have a tomato-like quality when they're mixed with the mozzarella. This here is green banana salad.
Green banana salad.
Not plantains, actual green bananas, which you can get at any of the major supermarkets because there are enough Latin people here that like them. And you boil the green bananas in their skin, cut them up, and you basically make German potato salad with them.
You are kidding me.
No, I put a little cilantro.
I thought that was potato salad.
I put a little cilantro in there.
Look at that.
Just to give it a twist. But it's basically just onions and vinegar and garlic and boiled
bananas. All right,
well,
let me get a plate here. 800-348-2551 is the number if you want to talk to Rick Orlando today on the program. So this is, now I thought all bananas were green when they started.
Well, they are. But they're never green enough to make green banana salad, or they're often not unless you find the actual green ones.
So this is just unripened banana?
Unripened bananas, boiled in their skins, and then cut up and mixed with onions and vinegar, a little garlic.
So you boil them in the skin.
Yeah.
Why not just, they fall apart if you take them out?
They'll fall apart, yeah. You kind of slit the skin and then boil them for about a half an hour until they're tender. They taste like potatoes.
It has the consistency of potato.
But it's a nice twist. Okay, Ray's chewing, everybody. And while Ray chews, I will tell you, there is a difference between a banana and a plantain, or a plantain, as they're pronounced. A plantain is a completely different animal or vegetable. But green bananas are great. There's a hint of the little banana flavor, but mostly this is starchy potato-like consistency.
It's an amazing dish.
And
it's close enough to potato salad that if you don't tell the uninitiated, they probably wouldn't even...
And it's a nice twist. Again,
it's really nice.
I'm very much an advocate of using as much local as I can. But I also think it's good to support some of the economies in places of the world that can, you know, need the economic support, and also to integrate your own palate and your own mind into these great flavors that are out there. I mean, how many people around here go to the Caribbean in the winter? A lot. And they go there and they eat that food. Bring it home. Cook it home.
This is, now, cilantro in this?
A little cilantro, but you don't have to. I did that to make it Puerto Rican because it's a Puerto Rican dish. But if you put dill in there, it would be like German potato salad.
It really is good. Now, as far as potato salad in general, you go for the German style more than the mayonnaise-y?
It depends on what I'm drinking.
Ah.
If it's a good cookout and there's brats and verse, we do German. But if it's kind of like a fried chicken southern thing, we'll do mayonnaise, a little mayonnaise and mustard. You know, all potato salad has its value.
Has virtue to it.
And mayonnaise is one of the great... Actually, mayonnaise is, according to Escoffier, the great writer, French culinarian, the original formula sauce.
Really?
Yes.
And do you make your own?
Yeah.
You do?
Well, we use prepared mayonnaise for some things, and we make our own for some things, yes.
Well, that's a terrific dish. The green banana, sort of a potato salad, and you also brought the Cuban pot roast. Yeah. What's in that?
The ropa vieja. That is one of our best-selling dishes in both restaurants. That's just chuck or brisket cooked for hours with wine and olives and tomatoes, but it starts out with a sofrito base, which is a traditional Latin seasoning. You know, almost all countries that I've visited have what we call their trinity. You know, Cajun food is peppers, onions, celery. Mm-hmm. Italians use onions, garlic. French use onions, carrots. The Spanish use peppers and onions. That's their character of their food.
Yeah.
In the Caribbean, they make a sofrito, which is simply made in a Cuisinart or a food processor or in a mortar and pestle, if you're old school, of onions, garlic, peppers, and cilantro. And you make a paste of that. When you fry it before you fry it in the oil before you add the ingredients, it becomes much greater than the sum of its parts. You don't taste onion, you don't taste garlic, you don't taste peppers, and you don't taste cilantro. You taste sofrito. It is a distinct Latin flavor, and that's what gives that brisket such a great flavor.
How long do you cook the brisket before you get it ready?
Well, if it's a brisket like that, we'll cut it up into like fist-sized chunks and braise it for like 3-4 hours with the chuck shoulder. Probably about an hour and a half, just like pot roast,
you
know, and it's got plenty of tomato. You know, Cuban food is not that exotic. It's a lot more continental in its flavors. I mean, they have black beans and all these ingredients, but their food has a very Spanish-Italian influence. And so that has a very distinct flavor of braised beef, but with a little Latin twist.
You must give us at least the basics of your recipe for the Jamaican jerk wings, because it's something... If you haven't tried it, you need to try it.
Well, if you go to rickorlando.com,
yeah,
my jerk sauce is online, and you got to make jerk. Jerk is a Jamaican staple. It's a preservative and a seasoning and a marinade and a baste and a finishing sauce. The key ingredients in jerk are Jamaican allspice, which is they call pimento down there, which grows wild everywhere, Scotch bonnet peppers, onion scallions, a little sweet. We use a little molasses, a little salt. We use a little soy sauce, some nutmeg, some cinnamon, thyme. But the main things are the thyme, Scotch bonnets, onions, and allspice. So you make your jerk. The way we do our wings, which makes them really awesome at our restaurant, is we don't deep fry them. We marinate them, and we roast them at high heat for about 30 minutes till they're cooked.
Yeah.
And then when you come to the restaurant and order them, they just get quickly reheated in the oven with the sauce on them. So they slide off the bone. The meat is really tender, and they're not fried.
Now, what is the drawback of frying wings?
There's no real drawback of frying
wings.
I've
had some very good fried wings.
Absolutely. And most people aren't really hip with frying at home. There's nothing wrong with frying at home. It's actually, you know, it's a good thing to do when you want to make something crispy. But these are easier to do at home. But I like the marinating and roasting first because the flavor is all the way to the bone.
Mm.
Where a lot of times places will fry wings, throw them in sauce, and the sauce hits you. But the chicken itself is not super delicious.
Yeah, you make a point.
You know? So this gets it in there. It's penetration, osmosis, all those good words.
Rick Orlando is our guest today. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. It is July and January. We'd love to take your calls or else I can't eat. And if you don't talk to Rick, I can't eat. And I'd like to eat. Our number, 800-348-2551. It's a Food Friday, and we will be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from SUNY Schenectady County Community College, offering over 55 degree, certificate, and program options in music, culinary arts, business, liberal arts, math, and science, sunyscc.edu. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butterscratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com. Uncle Sam's All-American Chocolate Factory, offering over 100 chocolates, including truffles, buttercrunch, and sea-salted caramels, located on Albany Street, Schenectady, and Newton Plaza, Loudonville, UncleSamsCandy.com. And Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass, European cuisine infused with flavors of the world, Northampton, Massachusetts, grab life by the knife and fork, VivaFreshPasta.com.
Yeah, the pot roast rocks, the Cuban pot roast. Thank you, Break Time, for that one. 800-348-2551. It's a Food Friday. Rick Orlando is here. We talk about July and January. And, boy, it's perfect time to think July. You brought a lot of colorful fruit here. What's the big green one?
That's a green papaya, which
wow.
is more of a savory papaya.
It's like a watermelon.
Yeah, in Southeast Asia. They grate these and make salad, like slaw, out of them because it's more starchy, but it's got all those great components that papaya has, digestives and minerals.
Yeah.
Plantain,
the
red bananas.
What's the oddly shaped one?
The starfruit.
What the heck is a starfruit?
A carambola. If you cut it against the grain, it makes perfect stars. It's kind of a
it's
nice
like a
thing.
It's like a pepper.
It's sweet. It's fruit. I'll get the knife out later. We'll whack a piece
okay.
on the
just
next
careful
break.
With the knife. I mean, we've already had a disaster. Let's go to the phone. It's a Doug and Kerhonkson. Doug, you're on.
Howdy.
Hi.
How are you, Doug?
I'm fine. Hi, Ray. Hi, Rick.
How are you?
Rick. We met, like, about a couple of weeks ago.
Well, I'll be darned.
I don't know if you remember the ugly guy you saw at Mohonk at the art show.
The ugly guy. One of them? No, I'm only kidding. I thought I was looking in the mirror,
man.
Dude.
I looked at you and I said, I know you. You're a cook.
Yes. How are you?
You remember? I'm fine. I am at the moment cooking up a filling, a salmon filling for dim sum.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Friday, and the reason I'm doing it, it is a thing called fat. A friend of mine comes home from work. He stops by me. We have cocktails, and I always cook for him. And the fat means Friday afternoon thing.
Okay.
Okay, good.
The point of my call is that I was wondering if you ever, and I just saw you recently on beating Bobby Flay, which I congratulate you on.
Thank you. That was glorious.
I'm sure it was. But do you ever fill your latkes with anything?
I've never filled them. I make lots of different things to put on top of them. But I find sometimes when I stuff things, it compromises the texture of the actual latke, you know? So I'd rather make a great latke and almost give you a salad bar of toppings to throw everything from smoked salmon to chicken curry to fruit salad, whatever you want to put on them, you know, sour cream.
Chicken curry sounds good.
Yeah, why not?
Oh, yeah, I understand, but I want to tell you what. Experiment and play, because whenever I fill them either with onions or cheese or, oh, my God, roasted red peppers, my family, my people go crazy. So
I'll try it. It sounds kind of like a Jewish pierogi.
Hey, Doug, thanks a lot for the call. You know that guy, huh?
We were at the Mohonk Mountain House, had a a gingerbread house competition, and I was one of the judges, and I think his family or somebody were one of the competitors.
So what is the deal with the gingerbread houses? You make them and then you eat them, or you just make them and look at them?
You make them and then you put them in the attic and the mice eat them.
Ah, well, yes. Sounds like a plan. Jay in Brunswick, you're on with Rick Orlando.
Hey, gentlemen, how are you?
Hi, good. Jay.
Hey, just a quick question. For Rick, want to know, besides actually, you know, having good quality food, obviously, what do you think is one of the most important or the most important aspect of having a successful restaurant, whether, you know, it's a location or ambiance inside? And I'll hang up and listen for the answer.
Thanks. All right. A lot.
I could sum that up in one word: experience. It's all about the experience. There are plenty of places with good food. There are plenty of places with a good vibe. There are a lot of places with expert service, great locations. It's all about the experience. People come back to restaurants when they have a good experience. You have a great time, a great meal, and you feel like, I want to do this again. So to me, it's all about creating an experience.
And food's got to be good, though. You can go to Shakey's Pizza and have an experience.
Well, a good experience, okay. Yes. No, the food is crucial.
Okay.
But the experience is, I think, the most important thing. We've gone to plenty of places where the food is great, but there's three people in the restaurant and the music's not on and you just feel like you're in church.
Yeah.
We've gone to plenty of places that are hopping and fun, but the food is, you know, frozen stuff in a fryer and you don't want to go back there. If you can combine quality product with a good experience, you should have a working formula. But people really like to feel like they're in a warm, friendly, active, exciting place.
So when you started, did you have the gestalt of the whole thing, or did it take time for you? So this is how
I had a mindset and a plan exactly what I wanted to create. I had this perfect combination. In the 80s, I worked at a restaurant called The Harvest in Cambridge, which was local food, daily menu, passionate about what you made. And then I worked for a company called Roti in New York, which ran legendary theme restaurants in the 80s and 90s.
What's a legendary theme?
They ran Sugar Reef Caribbean.
Ah.
They ran Tortilla Flats Mexican, Gulf Coast Cajun, and Cowgirl Hall of Fame Southwest.
Okay.
And all those restaurants were bouncy, vibrant, colorful experiences.
Yeah.
So I said to my wife, I want to open a restaurant that has as much love for the food as The Harvest, which is much focus on the experience as the Roti Group, which is what New World Bistro and New World Home Cooking are.
And you had it from the get-go.
Yeah, that was the plan.
Anything changed in the 20-some-odd years?
Evolved.
Things evolve. Well, what have you improved upon?
Well, colors have toned down. There's no more lime green and purple in the restaurant. The music
is... Oh, that's coming back, man.
Yeah, of course it will, just with bell bottoms.
Right.
The music is always a big part of the experience in my restaurants. Servers that are cast instead of staffed.
What do you mean?
You cast your staff. It's kind of like creating a Broadway show.
Isn't that dangerous?
No.
From a personnel standpoint, you say, well, you're too short, you don't fit the bill.
Oh, it's not the way they look. It's the way they are. Personality.
You cast
a personality. You know, you need the bubbly one, you need the intellectual one, you need the comical one, you need the
slightly klutzy
one.
I'd like the klutzy one today, Rick. Would that be all right?
But you know, it is important, I think, to think about your staff as your cast in the show. And, you know, if you go to a lot of people visit New World Bistro Bar, they say, oh, my God, that big guy with the beard, I love him. Or this, because they're characters, you know, and characters are important. They make you come back.
So you feel in some way that you're a director as well as a chef.
Producer, director. Absolutely.
That's amazing.
That's the gig.
Go back to the phones. And Martha in Boyceville. Martha, you're on.
Rick, how did I never know you were at Sugar Reef?
Ah, see?
Big Sugar Reef fan.
That was the place. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was the place for a while. I'm thinking, Steve and I love scallops, but I can't really afford to, like, spend $25 for scallops for dinner. So I started buying the little bay scallops,
mm-hmm.
which are delicious, but I feel like I'm missing out. Like, I don't know exactly how to cook them. So tell me, would you...
Cooking little bay scallops. Well, they're kind of tricky because they cook really quickly, right? I mean, they make great ceviche where you don't cook them at all. But when I cook bay scallops, they like fat. Brown butter is really good, but quick, high heat, and out. If you cook them a long time, they turn into little pencil erasers. So,
okay, so it's hot fire, butter.
Butter or olive oil or a combination.
Sure. Yeah.
One of my favorite ways to cook them is to just put a little butter and olive oil in a pan and put a small amount of minced garlic and a little bit of jalapeno in the pan with the scallops all at once. Once it starts sizzling and moving around, squeeze a bunch of lime juice on it. Throw a little cilantro and then eat them on some noodles or on rice. They're delicious that way. But you got to keep them simple and quick, like 60 seconds max.
In
cooking, yeah.
Great.
Yep.
Thanks, Martha.
Yeah, I could never. Sometimes I let them overcook and they become rubbery, and other times they're perfect, and I can never remember what it is that I'm doing. But
yeah, and if you're in doubt, just sear them and turn off the pan and let them sit in the pan. They'll finish cooking because they're so small. I mean, they're literally like, third of an ounce, quarter ounce.
Martha, thanks a lot for the call. Is there no danger to eating an undercooked scallop?
Probably less danger than there is going, across Central Avenue at 5 o'clock. But no, not really. I mean, there's always
there's
danger.
A lot of danger.
There's always danger in eating raw and undercooked food. It depends on your sourcing, right? You know, you have a good, reliable source. You make sure everything's fresh. But we make ceviches all the time, and we use those in ceviches. And ceviches are cooked with acidity, not with heat, right? The lime juice, lemon juice will actually cook the fish.
How long does it take to do that?
Depends on how thick you cut it, but a small scallop, 3 or 4 hours, they're ready to eat.
I know some people are crazy about that technique. What is the advantage as a chef? What do you find from a culinary standpoint is the advantage?
Well, I wouldn't say there's an advantage. It's a variation. There are certain fish that I would never serve raw, like cod or swordfish, because they should be cooked. But things like tuna, mahi-mahi, white bass, things you would get in a sushi bar.
Yeah.
They ceviche really well. The advantage is more creativity. But the other thing is, if you do it correctly, the fish's texture is beautiful because it's not cooked by heat. So the protein doesn't seize and get chewy. It stays really tender and buttery.
Rick Orlando is our guest. It's a Food Friday, 800-348-2551. Gene and Colony. Gene, you're on with Rick Orlando.
Hi.
Hi, Gene.
As I said to the gal, I've been curious lately about my cooking methods. Crock pot, should it be stoneware, should it be, black iron frying pan, the oven. I do a lot of bone broths, and, I've been doing... or at least wanting to do some different types of pot roasts and stuff. But I'm hearing some things, even though I have been using the crock pot quite a lot, that maybe that is not the best way for me to be going.
Why? I love the crock pot.
You're talking about for pot roasts. I think that the most important thing is when you're cooking something a long time, chemicals leach out of the pots and pans, so you want to make sure that if you're cooking something for a long period of time, you use something that's healthy to cook in, like a cast iron Dutch oven or a stainless steel lined pan, not a nonstick skillet or an aluminum pan, because that, if you're going to flip two eggs in a nonstick skillet, they're in there 30 seconds, a minute, whatever, it's not the greatest thing, but it's certainly not going to kill you. But you don't want to braise or cook things a long time.
What's the material that they make a nonstick?
Well, the old nonsticks have the, PCOEs that are in here.
Oh, the right. PF.
Yeah, PF. But they make these new ones that are ceramic-based. They're white inside, and they're made from crushed ceramic, basically, which are pretty good, and they work really well. But for long cooking, as long as you have a stainless-lined pot, a cast iron pot, or a well-enameled pot like a Le Creuset, like an expensive one. Like, I don't want to slag anybody, but I don't like to buy the knockoff brands on those kind of things because you don't know what's in them, where Le Creuset is an established brand, tested. But, just make sure that your pot, if your crock pot has a stainless steel pan or a ceramic pan, just sometimes they have the ceramic coated, whatever, the black stuff.
Yeah.
Just look into it. Google it and find out, what's in that pan and pot. And if it's fine, just go for it. I do like Dutch ovens.
Okay, but like long term is what I was thinking. I was thinking the other night, I thought back to some, when you're saying Dutch oven, it reminds me of my grandmother. And
your grandmother knew best.
I know, and I wish I could. I don't know. It's probably down in my basement. I don't even know it. But I was thinking of getting one of those, quite possibly. And even if I put my oven temperature at 220 or something, to do the long-term part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think oven braising is great. Bring it up to heat on the stove, pop it in the oven, 220, and go out. Cast iron Dutch ovens are one of the greatest things you can have.
They really are great.
And they're not that much money. And, you know, they have them everywhere. You can actually get them at sporting goods stores now, like Gander Mountain, camping places.
Oh, I see.
Bring them out to bring,
right.
You know, you want to relive that baked bean experience at the campsite.
Absolutely.
I never thought of the sporting goods place. I would do that.
Well, you can find a good Dutch oven in many places.
Yeah, and I use them a lot, you know. And we have a couple at home, and I actually use them when I do catering. I bring them out and put them over the sternos and serve right out of them.
Very versatile.
Yeah.
Do you ever watch TV?
Yeah.
Do you ever see the ads for the copper pants?
No.
You don't see the As Seen on TV copper pants?
No.
Oh. Got my wife some for Christmas.
I've learned how
she
to
hit
avoid
me right over the head with them.
I've learned how to avoid commercials.
But they work great.
Are they copper?
Well, I don't know.
No.
They're copper-ish. They seem to work. Let's go to Lenore in Turner's Falls. Lenore.
Hi.
Hello, Lenore.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I'm just...
Quoth Orlando,
nevermore. You got me quoting. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I have a great recipe of Cuban bread, James Beard, and I'm making bread for a group of people to go with soup on Sunday, but I don't want to be stuck having to reheat it. I want it to stay crispy, so I don't know what shape to put it in, or should I just make loaves and slice it?
Well, I would not slice it in advance.
I'll make it Sunday morning, I guess, because I already made two loaves, and they just don't stay crispy.
Well, Cuban bread is a little bit on the sweet side. Is it supposed to be crispy?
There's no sugar in it.
Yeah.
It's just regular bread, you know, like Italian bread, I thought.
Well, I think one of the secrets to keeping bread like that crispy is never put it in a plastic bag and never refrigerate it. Put it in a paper bag and roll up the end of the paper bag.
Really?
Oh, yeah. For years, all the Italian loaves always came in those paper sleeves because the air keeps it crispy. If you seal it, it gives off moisture as it sits, and the moisture will almost... not steam it, but make it mushy.
Yeah.
I almost never buy bread in plastic, ever. Buy it in paper.
Genius.
Put it in a paper bag. If you're making them in advance, put them in a paper bag and throw them in the freezer. And then when you take them out of the freezer, you can just warm them to room temp or put them in the oven for 5 minutes. That's the best way.
Well, is it better to make tiny bits? What I forgot the French name or Italian name. Brulees?
No, the smaller the bread, the harder it is to keep the inside creamy. A nice sized loaf will be good because the crust will stay crispy if you put it in a paper bag, and the inside will keep that nice airy
and
crispiness.
Slice them before I serve it.
Absolutely. Slice it as soon as, you know, as possible, close as possible to service.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Lenore. We appreciate it. Okay, Rick, what is this ketchup?
Okay, so ketchup, the all-American condiment.
I know what that is, right.
Right. Well, ketchup was invented because there was no refrigeration and they weren't able to transport tomatoes, and tomatoes started to get funky.
Right.
Ketchup is originally from Indonesia, catsup.
Yep.
And it's essentially just a fruit or vegetable, vinegar, sugar, and spices.
Yeah.
That's banana ketchup. That's made, we buy bananas.
Amazing.
And when the bananas get overripe, we cook them down with molasses, with vinegar, with some spices, and little tropical spices, and we make this banana ketchup, which is just fabulous.
I've never had anything like it.
Yeah, it's more like the original ketchup than tomato ketchup, but it's something you can do. You know, those bananas start getting too dark. Google a quick banana ketchup recipe or email me. You cook it down. You put it in a jar. It lasts in the fridge for months.
This is fantastic, and it's on plantains.
Those
are
on plantains. I was going to bring you some French fries because I know what you like, but I couldn't figure out how to reheat them here. You know? Yeah,
this is delicious.
Yeah.
Our guest is Rick Orlando. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We go over to Jim in Adams, Mass. Jim, you're on.
Hey, Ray.
Hey.
I'm glad you're enjoying your Friday afternoon.
It's very nice.
Excellent. Save some for me. yes, I'd just like to ask Rick, your book, one question is about we want clean food. I myself am seeing that one of the probably next large movements in the food industry will be going to more for grass-fed livestock than the grain-fed.
Mm-hmm.
And then on your wings, you say you roasted them in the oven. My wife has been doing a lot of things in the oven for years, you know, potatoes and garlic and things, you know,
mm-hmm.
instead of frying french fries. But the trouble with frying things in deep fat, frying them is not the frying, but reusing the oil constantly over and over again.
Exactly. Yeah, the oil begins to break down and becomes
carcinogenic compounds in the oil when you keep on reusing it.
Absolutely.
So if you just spray a little oil on something and put them in the oven, you're okay. All set.
Yeah, we do our we do have cauliflower nuggets on the menu at the bistro now, and those are oven baked, mm-hmm. oven fried, they call it. You know, be careful though, buying commercially prepared bags of things called oven fried, because they're usually pumped with lots of oil. To make them do that. Yeah. Get a nice hot oven, blast them. It works well.
Well, Jim, thanks a lot for the call and Happy New Year. We appreciate it. Our number is 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando is our guest. Rick is the chef owner of New World Home Cooking Company in Saugerties and the chef manager of New World Bistro Bar in Albany. Let's go to Mike in Saratoga. Mike, you're on.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you today?
How are you, Mike?
Good. I have just one kind of multi-part question I asked Chef Rick. Number one, what do you think of the insect movement, and have you ever tried it, and would you ever serve it?
Yes, yes, and yes. Well, first of all, let's start with something really simple. The most popular seafood protein in America is a bug, which is shrimp.
Oh, that's a bug?
Crabs are bugs.
Who knew?
Lobster are bugs. So we already eat bugs. We just happen to eat bugs that live in water, not on land. The predictions are that insects will be one of the primary sources of protein by the end of this century, going into next century in the world, because they're clean to breed, they breed prolifically, they produce a lot of protein, and they're delicious. I've had grasshoppers, I've had crickets, I've had ants. I'm not a fan of ants, but I do like the grasshoppers.
Why don't you like ants?
Yeah, they have kind of an acrid flavor, and frankly, there's not enough of them to eat.
Okay, now, how would you cook a grasshopper?
Well, in Mexico, they fry them a lot and then hit them with a good hot seasoning,
yeah.
or they'll cook them on a griddle. You want to get them crunchy, you know?
Well, the exoskeleton is fairly crunchy, right?
Right, and that's like a shrimp shell.
Is there a fillet section? Is
no,
like...
I think you just crunch the whole
really?
Thing.
Really? So there's no nice, sort of a nice middle,
you know,
like
we'll
a ribeye?
We'll get to that. I think we'll get to that. You go to the supermarket, there'll be little packages of, you know, tenderloin of grasshopper.
Mm, delicious.
But the crickets and grasshoppers seem to be good. You know, the palm grubs are high fat, and they're pretty popular in Indonesia and Southeast Asia. I've never had one, but I talked to someone who ate them and said they taste a lot like
chicken?
No, like a soft-boiled egg.
You're kidding me.
No, the yolk tastes a lot like an egg, like an egg yolk. So I'm all for it. Anything that we can do to continue to create good edible protein to feed the billions of people in this world with a lower economic footprint, environmental footprint, is a good thing. So why not?
Okay, well, you know, I don't want to sound ethnocentric, but let's not do an insect-eating show anytime.
Can we?
No, let's not.
Come on, soon.
Jim Lavulis, producer.
Soon!
You didn't hear that. We'll take a break.
Midsummer.
Here. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings, Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. Pekarsky's, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, family-owned since 1948, offering sausages from kielbasa to Italian to bratwurst and smoked meats. Home of New England farm-made sausage, open 7 days, pekarskys.com. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy and No Moo Dairy Free, handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. And Roundhouse Bakery, Cambridge, New York, featuring baked goods along with coffee, teas, soups, and sandwiches using locally sourced and organic as available produce and ingredients. Facebook.com/Roundhouse Bakery Cafe.
Let the record show that the host of this program just ate kale. It's very good, too. Rick Orlando is our guest. You have a little salad there.
Yeah, this is our signature kale salad. And, you know, I've been cooking kale forever. And frankly, I know factually that cooked kale actually provides more nutrients to your body than raw kale.
Really?
It's because you're eating kale mainly for the mineral content. You cannot destroy minerals even by cremating somebody. There's the minerals still live. and your body assimilates them more. However, eating raw greens and raw kale is delicious, more of a roughage experience.
Yeah.
So if you're eating raw kale because you think you're getting a lot more minerals, don't be fooled. But it's delicious, and you should eat it because it's fun. So kale is not necessarily made to be eaten raw. When you read about these 130-year-old people in Russia and Poland and, you know, down south, drink whiskey and smoke cigarettes and live to 100.
That's my family.
Yeah, they cook their greens for days, you know, and they get those minerals. However, what we've done with our kale to bring these new flavors and textures to it is we've added some homemade chutney, which is very tropical. This is local apples cooked with onions and turmeric and different spices, a little molasses again, a little bit of vinegar. Some curried cashews, which are addictively delicious, and a little goat cheese. And it brings all these sweet notes out of the kale and makes it really, really palatable in a way where you're not eating it like medicine, you're eating it like pleasure.
No, it's very tasty.
Yes, because I think some people get distracted and they start eating medicinally and forget that without pleasure, the medicine's useless.
Just a spoonful of sugar.
Yeah, a little pleasure is important in life, you know?
Let's go back to the phones on that brilliant note. Johanna in Albany is on with Rick Orlando.
Hi, thanks so much. I'm excited to talk to you guys.
Hi, Johanna.
I was wondering about it. Hi. I wanted to ask you about your seitan wings.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that I like them even better than your regular wings. And, you know, we're trying for... vegetarian, would love to be vegan, and you know, I'm wondering if there's any reproducing that at home.
Well, there's seitan is a tricky thing to make. We are very lucky. I forged a relationship 22 years ago with a woman in Kingston named Shama.
Okay.
Who?
Do you want to talk about the relationship?
She's it's a satanic relationship.
Oh, there you go. Well,
we get our satan from her.
You knocked it down. Well, way to go. All right, fine.
She has been producing the satan for both of our restaurants for 22 years. And she makes satan the old-fashioned way, which is not by using vital wheat gluten, but by actually using high-gluten flour and kneading and rinsing and kneading and rinsing for over an hour and then poaching it in like a tamari-based broth to get that meaty flavor and texture. Nobody has seitan like us in the world. However, if you want to Google it or send me an email, I'll send you the technique. Most people, when they make seitan, you can go to buy vital wheat gluten, mix it with water, boil it, and it's that rubbery and delicious, you know, if you like that. But our seitan kind of tastes like Salisbury steak, and that's why so many people who used to eat meat who are now vegetarian can't get enough of it. And it's because of that authentic method of using regular flour and rinsing. What seitan basically is 100% wheat gluten that you've rinsed all of the starches out of. When we start out with a 25-pound ball of flour to make seitan, because we do make it ourselves as well, we end up with about 4 to 6 pounds of seitan with it. All the rest
is rinsed.
Does it
take a long time to rinse it off?
Yeah, you just keep kneading and rinsing until the water runs clear, until it feels like a bazooka bubblegum at that point, you know? So that's our secret. And that's our secret.
Well, thank you,
the secret
Johanna.
Is
we appreciate
really
it.
Good seitan.
Well, that's interesting. We've talked about vegan food and vegetarian food before, and I know you're a proponent of that because of the texture, the feel that you get.
Well, that's, you know, I'm Italian. I love vegetables.
Yeah.
I love food that tastes really good.
Right.
Again, we'll go back to what I said after the break. I'm not a believer in eating food as medicine, but I'm a believer that food is medicine. You eat healthy food, you're getting your medicine without punishing yourself, without saying, I really like this because it's good for my heart. No. Say, I really like this and it's good for my heart is a different story, you know?
Rick Orlando is our guest. Mike in Burlington. Mike, you're on.
Yes. Nice to talk to you guys.
Hi, Mike.
Decent about 4 hours I'm committed to making some fried lotus root.
Ah.
Never done it before. I understand it can be a little bland.
Yeah. It's more of a garnish or something that, well, obviously goes well with Asian food, which has so many flavors that it is a good foil, just like white rice is a good foil for it. But it kind of tastes like a fried chip, you know, potato chip.
Okay.
Bit. Did you have a question
Well, I guess maybe about spicing it up a little bit. I'm basically using maybe rice flour, egg, and some sea salt to flavor it. But I don't know if there's something else I can add during the, say, the frying process or afterwards to make it a little more zesty, I guess.
A good seasoning salt would be nice, maybe a little five spice or something. But I think the key would have a good dipping sauce. That would make anything taste good.
What would you use?
Okay.
It depends on what else he's serving it with, but, you know, something with a little kick, a little Asian, a little ginger, a little garlic, maybe a little red bean paste or fermented bean paste, something a little sour to kind of complement that, you know. Or you can make a good dry seasoning, like a barbecue potato chip seasoning or something, and sprinkle it on the outside.
That sounds healthy.
Salt and a little smoked paprika, a little smoked chili, a little garlic powder, you know.
Hey, Mike, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Bye now. Our number is 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando is our guest today. How was New Year's Eve at New World?
New Year's Eve is the same every year. It is, what's the right word? I'm trying to think of the show. What kind of show is it again? It's an entertaining show.
What kind of show?
It's an
gong show.
It's an New Year's Eve is so much work.
Yeah,
so much work for all of my teams, because for one day, obviously we're packed and we're packed a lot. But it's a completely different menu for one day. Everything.
Why?
From the soup. Because it's special. It's what makes
just
the day special.
Man.
It, you know, when the whole world is celebrating, when 4 billion, maybe 3.5 out of 4 billion people in the world are going woohoo,
yeah,
we want to go woohoo as well.
So I take it you didn't have the Mariah Carey performance on. It was really special.
I caught it with the sound off.
Oh,
I think we were listening to the Pixies really loud while that was on.
I tell you what, I thought I was watching a Godzilla movie. The lips were moving and there was no sound. It was very impressive.
Some contemporary entertaining could be quite troubling to me.
It was very nice. Tony in North Adams, you're next with Rick Orlando.
Hi, Tony.
Hi, guys. I really love your show. Just a comment about the woman who was talking about Cuban bread.
Mm-hmm.
I've been making it for quite a few years from a recipe I got from a book. And it's like a no rise bread.
Mm-hmm.
That's the recipe I have. So you just throw it in the oven, turn the oven on, and it rises as it bakes, and it usually gives a really thick, really crispy crust.
Right.
But I've been kind of playing around with it and started just to see what would happen if I added like a little more yeast, substitute a cup of oatmeal for flour and stuff. So I'm getting some pretty good results from that.
And, is it still light, light and soft on the inside?
Well. It's I mean the original is kind of really thick and chewy on the inside, mm-hmm. but by adding like an extra tablespoon of yeast, some oatmeal, letting it rise for a few hours instead of just 15 minutes, which the original recipe is, and then I actually split it in half. Like last week, I tried and took half of it, rolled it out really flat, and made cinnamon like a cinnamon bread out of it.
Uh huh.
And that came out really good. So. I encourage people to experiment with recipes and see what you come up with.
Let me ask you a question. Do you spray water and steam it while it's cooking to get that crust to develop more or not?
No, I've never had to do that.
Yeah.
It just really gets thick, and so I don't. So you need it originally for like, I think 8 to 10 minutes or so. You let it set for 15 minutes, and then just cut it in half.
Yeah, let the proofing happen as it bakes.
Yeah,
right?
throw it on a baking sheet with a little cornmeal sprinkled on it.
Yeah, they probably figured that out down there because it's so hot down there that the bread would proof so big that it would take over the kitchen if they didn't get in the oven fast enough. So,
hey, Tony, thank you for the call. Rick Orlando is our guest. That Cuban pot roast, I keep coming back to it. Really amazing. Let's go to Ella in Albany. Ella, you're on.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Ella.
I'm a baker, and I wanted to know what Chef Orlando's favorite dessert is.
Ah.
Well, let me tell you something, Ella. I don't love dessert after dinner. I'm
what?
An Italian.
Okay.
I like dessert at like 4 p.m.
Oh, I see.
With a cup of espresso. It's not that I don't love dessert. After I've had a big dinner, mm-hmm. I'm happy with a truffle or a little bite of chocolate just to cleanse my palate. But when it comes to desserts, I do, and you know, it's funny, my wife and I really clash over this. I love custards and creamy things.
Yeah.
I love tarts. I'm not really a big fan of cake, you know? So I don't really have a favorite dessert, although... A monstrously good tiramisu at 4 p.m. with an espresso is pretty perfect for me. Mm. What's your favorite dessert, Ella?
I'm definitely on board with like a tiramisu and an espresso. Mm-hmm. Definitely more of a cake person, but lately I've been doing a creme brulee, a white chocolate creme brulee with raspberry underneath. Mm. Which is really great, and it definitely hits the spot.
Yeah, cake, you know, originally was not a dessert. Cake originally was kind of, we have this great book called Baking in America, and in the 1800s, cake was basically your day meal that you brought to work. Cake was not designed to be eaten after you've had soup, salad, entree, starch, vegetable. I mean,
right.
Cake is basically a butter and sugar sandwich, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's what I bring for lunch every day. Yeah, that's great. Hey, Ella, you know, while I have you here, you're a baker, and Chef Orlando, he cooks. Don't you think baking is much more difficult and requiring more finesse than just mere cooking?
I definitely don't want to underscore cooking, but I just opened a small cafe this year, and I definitely feel like in this last year I've learned so much about just, you know, how little tiny little things can change your results.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That getting consistency every single time is like your biggest challenge. And I look at some of my other colleagues in like the same industry and they're, you know, they're doing things to order where I'm, you know,
well, my feeling
into
is
the
baking,
wee hours trying to get everything done and perfect.
Well, baking to me is about 90% chemistry and 10% creativity. And good cooking is about 70% chemistry and 30%. And there are a lot of cooks that are 70% creativity and 30% chemistry, but their food is very hit or miss. You have to understand chemistry to be a good cook also. You can't blow that off. But baking is, especially when you're doing crumb, anything with crumbs, shells, cakes, you know, chemistry is important. Temperature, proper measurements, proper sifting, and all that is crucial.
Well, I must say, Ella and Rick, you didn't play along. I was trying to start a fight here, and it didn't work out.
Nah, we're on the same page.
Ella, before I let you go, what's the name of your place?
Butter and Sugar Company. It's in Troy Kitchen.
Okay. Well, thank
77 Congress Street.
Well,
free
thanks.
Plug.
Thank you.
I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
And we appreciate the call. Over to Wes in Middletown. Wes.
Yeah, hi. When I was a kid, my grandmother used to make something called kale and shinkle. And I have no idea what the shinkle was. I was wondering if you
Kale
might
and shinkle,
know.
That's a law firm, right?
I was looking at it on the computer screen, kale and shinkle, and I thought the person answering the phone spelled shiitake wrong or something.
Shinkle, eh?
Shinkle. I have no idea. What nationality?
It was German.
German.
Yeah,
shinkle.
It was like a small little, almost like a bead. I don't know if it
like
was a pasta or a bean or
it sounds
a
like
rice
a pasta.
Cream.
I'll tell you what. Facebook me or Google me and send me a message. I'll find out.
How do we get into
I have some
find
German
Rick
friends.
Orlando out there.
You can go to rickorlando.com. You can go to Chef Rick Orlando on Facebook, either one. But I have some German friends who have a butcher shop down in Saugerties. I'll track it down.
We'll track down the shinkles.
I'll say, hey, what's a shinkle?
What's a shinkle?
Mr. Winkle?
Let's go over to Mary and Colony. Mary, you're on with Rick Orlando.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, Rick. So my family and I were just starting to become vegetarians. And I recently just did some reading about lectins. Apparently everything I'm eating is wrong. So.
Now, wait a
well,
minute.
You know.
Including beans, tomatoes. I can't even imagine giving up tomatoes.
Here's the thing. Everyone's constitution processes food a little differently. My daughter had to give up tomatoes after it being her primary food source when she was a vegan and vegetarian for a long time because she was getting muscle pains and she was getting acne.
From the tomato?
The doctor said basically did an elimination diet. What do you eat the most? Cut that out of her diet. I think it's really simple. We're hunters and gatherers, and we should eat a balanced rotational diet and not eat the same thing all the time. One of the issues with if you're going to be vegan and you're going to be relying on beans and legumes as your main form of protein is that you can overload on one chemical as opposed to the other. Where like the Hindus are vegetarians and they rotate in paneer and yogurt and dairy products for their protein and they don't have as many issues. So that's something to consider if you're going vegan is repetition of the same things over and over in your body as opposed to a rotational diet. Because even, you know, I'm an omnivore and the word omnivore means I eat everything.
Right.
And I don't eat, it's not like today's meat day, tomorrow's veg day, but there are plenty of days. I'll go 2 or 3 days without eating meat. But I think that, you know, you have to be, you know, keep doing your research. The more we know about food science, the more scary food gets. So realize there's a quote on my website. It says, the peasants are always right. The peasants figured out how to eat and what to eat and how to survive and how to go from the primordial slime to the urban centers. And they know how to eat. So I think that's the way to go.
I knew you were a communist. I knew it. Joe in Del Mar. Joe, you're on with Rick Orlando.
Secular humanist. Hey, Joe.
Hey, guys. Hey, Rick.
Hi.
I'm such a huge fan, and I'm so glad for all your success in the area.
Oh, thanks, Joe.
Yeah. So I had a question about I'm a huge fan of oysters, mm-hmm. and I'm kind of not a huge fan of getting food poisoning.
Not really.
That's good.
So I was kind of wondering, like, what's a guy like me who doesn't knows how to shuck an oyster do to find some good oysters to sort of take home?
Okay, we have about 20 seconds.
Okay, 20 seconds. There is one independent fishmonger in the area called Finn Your Fishmonger. They have a store in Guilderland, yep. and they're opening a few more. Go to them. Tell them you want oysters. Tell them you want them the day they bring them in. They'll call you. You can get them fresh.
All right, Joe, that's it. That's where we will have to leave the program. Rick Orlando, the website once again, old boy.
Just go to rickorlando.com, and there's no K in Rick. That gives you the buttons for all the restaurants and the catering and me all at once. So rickorlando.com.
Well, thanks for
the portal.
Thanks for the great chow. Thanks mm-hmm. for coming here on a July in January. Support comes from Bread and Butter, located in North Amherst Mill District, offering breakfast and lunch daily from traditional staples to chef specialties such as duck confit hash and maple sriracha pork belly. Bread and Butter, Amherst.com. 20 Railroad Public House, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, providing local and seasonally inspired pub fare using antibiotic and added hormone-free meats, local produce, craft beer, cocktails, and wine. 20railroad.com. Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasoning, Sheffield, Massachusetts. Handcrafted in small batches, infused sea salt specializing in garlic and hot pepper blends, creating special blends with labels for gifts, weddings, and corporate events. RollingRockSalt.com for market appearances. And Field Goods, working to help people change the way they eat and support sustainable communities. Local produce delivered weekly to workplace and community locations. Field-Goods.com. Thanks again to the great Rick Orlando for being with us today. Thanks to the great Zach Malloy for answering the calls. Barb King, no, Zach Malloy was at the controls. Barb King, also great, took the calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. He's great. Everybody's great. I hope you have a great weekend. Everything's fine. The news is next.